While the economic recovery has been steadily gaining ground this past year, recent reports show it seems to be bypassing young people.
Even though the economy has been adding around 200,000 jobs per month, wages have been stagnant, and younger workers in particular have seen their incomes grow 60% slower than the national average.
Derek Thompson joins us now. He's a senior editor at The Atlantic, where he writes about economics. Derek, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
So how much have wages declined for young people between the ages of 25 and 34? One of the groups you look at.
Right. When you look at this group, young people between the age of 25 and 34, which some people consider the sort of employable sector of the millennial generation, you do see that wages have declined in just about every major industry except for healthcare. They've declined tremendously in leisure and hospitality. Typically, this is where you find restaurant jobs or barista jobs. They've declined by 8 to 10% in retail and wholesale. That includes two of the most common jobs in the country, cashiers and retail salespeople. So this is between 2007 and 2013, since the recession began. And you do find that wages adjusted for inflation have fallen just about everywhere.
And what about an even younger group of people, those between 18 and 24?
It's sadly the exact same story. Once you take out the sector of healthcare, where wages have grown for a couple complicated reasons we can talk about later, you still see that for young workers between 18 and 24, so those who have graduated from high school and chosen to go right into the labor force, those choosing to work part-time while going to college, and those who are just a year or two out of their bachelor's of arts or science, whether they're working in retail or leisure and hospitality or in a professional common white-collar job, the studies show that wages adjusted for inflation have fallen across the board. So even if the wages appear to be growing in number year to year, they are falling behind even the slow rate of growth in prices for healthcare, housing, groceries, and clothes.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you right, it's not that the wages themselves are being lowered, it's that they're not keeping up.
Exactly. We're looking at inflation-adjusted wages. That's typically what people look at. It's very, very rare for wages, what economists would call nominal wages, to drop. That is, for somebody to earn $50,000 one year and then be asked to earn $49,000 the next year and $48,000 the year following. There is a theory in economics called the theory of sticky wages, which suggests that because it's such a tremendously – it's a tremendous psychological blow to actually have your wages lowered, what you tend to have is wages frozen. So as the price of other goods grows, your wage does not.
So in terms of the why, which is the big question here, what are some of the culprits that you're looking at?
The most important culprit when you're looking at jobs and income earned from those jobs is this familiar Bash Brothers of technology and globalization. And they're a Bash Brother because they work together. Essentially, they conspire in many ways to gut middle-class jobs by either sending work abroad, say sending manufacturing jobs abroad to China or the rest of Asia, or replacing certain routine-heavy jobs with automation, with software. There was a really fascinating 2013 study by David Auteur and some other economists that looked at what exactly the effect of globalization technology was, and it said that they have subtly different roles, that computerization technology doesn't reduce employment, but it does reduce the number of decent-paying, routine-heavy jobs, and so it sort of guts the middle of our spectrum of jobs. Globalization has outright taken jobs that used to exist in many cities, particularly in the current Rust Belt, and simply sent them overseas.
And how does this compare to older workers? Are we seeing a symmetry there too?
We are seeing a little bit of asymmetry there. You know, wage growth hasn't been good for any generation, but it's been particularly bad for young people. And, you know, one of the most important reasons for that is that, A, young people, you emerge as part of this enormous cohort of people desperate for jobs. And people in the few areas that were hiring in 2009, 2010 knew that they could pay just about anything to get young people to work for them because jobs were so scarce. And that definitely put downward pressure on wage growth. The other thing is, it is just commonly true that young people tend to be paid a lot less than older people. This is it's a factoid. It's completely self-evident. But as a result, it becomes easier to not pay young people nearly as much money. And so you've seen, I think, entry-level jobs essentially have their wages frozen, particularly in some of these low-skill areas in leisure, in hospitality, in retail, in wholesale. These employers have essentially realized that they don't have to raise their entry-level wages at all for six consecutive years, and they can still get young people applying to these jobs because the market for work is so tight.
Entry-level jobs typically don't pay, you know, what you would earn down the road. Is this to be expected in a certain sense? Is this something that you recover from? You put in your time at a job that pays less, and then you graduate to higher-paying jobs, and then economically you start building wealth.
Absolutely. That is an incredibly familiar story, and it has happened before, and it could happen again. One reason to be optimistic is that the economy, although it's had a bad recovery overall, certainly a slow and plodding recovery, is doing a lot better now. We had fantastic growth in the final quarter of 2014. We have an unemployment rate which is steadily falling. We're creating more than 200,000 jobs a month, so the recovery seems to be on track. At the same time, there is a little bit of evidence that suggests that if you have the misfortune of graduating into a recession, the penalty of graduating into recession stays with you. It's not a cut that heals; it's a scar. When Lisa Kahn, I believe a Yale economist, looked at the effect of graduating into the Reagan recession in the early 1980s, she found that those unlucky graduates saw their wages penalized for decades after the Reagan recession was over. So there's both the optimistic case that we're getting back to normal and the pessimistic case that there are some generations or are some graduate years that are simply more unlucky than others.
All right, and as you said, we're supposedly in a recovery right now, which means the economy is adding jobs, things seem to be looking up. So does that mean that we're seeing any indication of that same thing happening in wages for young people?
We just haven't seen that much wage growth, honestly. Even as we've added a good number of jobs in the last year in particular. The question used to be, where are the jobs? Now the unemployment rate is falling fairly steadily, and jobs are growing fairly steadily. The new question is, where are the wages? We seem to be creating jobs most effectively and most consistently in those very industries that don't have high wages. And so one way to think about this sort of conceptually, even visually, if I can do that trick on the radio, is to say, imagine that the jobs that exist in the United States exist along a spectrum from low-paying to middle-paying to high-paying, and you can sort of see a nice little stepladder. Well, what's happened because of computerization and software development and globalization is that a lot of those step two jobs, those middle skill, middle class, middle paying jobs, those have declined. And the step one jobs, the low-skill, low-paying jobs, have grown fairly steadily in the recovery. And so what you have is a gutting of the middle, an evaporation of middle-class work, which is being made up in the short term in job creation on either end, but as a result means that for lots of people who otherwise would be working in the 1970s in a manufacturing union and earning a decently comfortable salary, a lot of them now are working in retail or restaurant jobs that are not paying similar wages. And so I think that would be the chief concern, is that the composition of jobs has changed and will continue to change in the near future.
Does that also mean it's getting a lot harder to make a jump from a beginning level job to the third tier on the ladder, the one that pays even more after the middle, because you can't really skip a level?
That's a great point. That's a really interesting point. Yeah, I think that you find that on the one hand, this is the most educated generation in the history of the country. More kids in the millennial generation are graduating from college than any previous generation, and that's a fantastic thing. But at the same time, we have the misfortune of having belonging to the most educated generation in American history that also happened to graduate into a recession. And so an outstanding question for economists and far more importantly for young people is exactly the one that you asked. Which of these two forces is going to win in the long term? Will it be the college degree, which has historically been an extremely dependable ticket to punching your way into the upper middle class? Will the college degree win, or will the recession win? Will the structural changes in the economy can fight back against this incredibly educated generation? And that, unfortunately for our purposes on this show, is a question that I simply cannot answer.
We're talking right now about the shrinking incomes of young workers, and we'd like to hear from you. What does the current job market look like for someone between the ages of 18 and 34? Are you one of these young workers, maybe got out of school during the recession, out of college, and you're finding it difficult to make a jump to a middle-tier job, maybe even to one of these entry-level jobs? And how do you think we need to reverse this trend? What impact is it having on your life? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can chime in on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about younger workers dealing with stagnating wages and how it affects their lives and the economy. We want to hear from you. Have you or maybe your kid recently entered the job market for the first time? Do you as a younger worker feel you're being paid a living wage? And given the job prospects out there, does this affect decisions on things like, you know, buying a car, starting a family, buying a house? Call at 800-642-1234, post on the Central Time Facebook page, or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
Derek Thompson stays with us. He's a senior editor at The Atlantic, where he writes about economics, labor markets, and the entertainment business. And we're going to go to the phones right now. We've got David joining us from Prairie du Chien. Hi, David.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
With trillion-dollar student loan debt and wages that can't keep up with inflation, how are these workers ever going to pay off their student loans? Won't they be saddled with that for the rest of their lives?
Great. Thanks a lot for that question, David. And you were getting at that a little bit before, Derek, about sometimes this is a hit that stays with you for a long time, longer than you might expect. And is this one of the areas that you might never, you know, be able to catch up on, or at least have a harder time at it?
This is a really important policy question, and I think that the Obama administration is exquisitely sensitive to the fact that one of the side effects of this being the most educated generation in American history is that it is also the most indebted young generation in American history with regard specifically to student debt. And so as a result, one of their policies is to limit student debt payments to 10% of your income by month, so that you are never asked to pay pay too much of your salary, whatever it is. And if you simply keep up with payments, then they'll retire the debt after a certain number of decades. This is one solution to a problem that I think is more broadly intractable, which is that there are a lot of people. Truly, it's a cultural problem. It's a broken social contract. It's the idea that you have millions of people who thought that going to school would punch a ticket to the middle and upper middle class and beyond, and in fact graduated into an economy worse than the one that they went to school in. And so people are feeling like this is an unfair bet. And, you know, a policy solution is to say, well, limit the amount of money you have to pay per month. But the larger question, the more important question, is whether those young people are going to be able to earn enough in their 30s and 40s to participate not only in the economy and the consumer economy, but also be able to put together a family, a home, a car, the trappings of the American dream.
Great. Thanks a lot for your thoughts, David. Appreciate that. And we talked about that on the show about a month ago, Derek, about why millennials weren't buying homes. And that seems to be a piece of the puzzle
right
here. As you said, a benchmark of the American dream, sometimes of being adult, getting married, buying a house, or just saving money for something. Is that all going to be affected in this?
This is a huge question. The irony is that past recoveries have been won and lost on the ability of households to buy houses and cars. But this recession was all about debt. It was all about people not buying homes anymore. And so you didn't have one of these engines that typically drives recoveries from the start. That engine was dead. And I think that with regard to this generation specifically, A, they just don't have enough money. The simplest Occam's razor explanation for why you don't see as many car purchases and home purchases among the millennial generation is a simple math problem. There is not enough money in the bank account to buy these bigger ticket items. But separately from the simple math, I do think that there is a larger cultural question of whether things are changing in ways that it becomes possible to live a happy life without a large exurban home and a car. We are seeing more people gravitate to large cities with public transportation. We're seeing the proliferation of mobile technologies allowing people to have driving options like Zipcar and Uber and Lyft, which allow them to have access to wheels without actually owning them. And then with homes, because people are living closer to urban centers, which tend to be dense, you don't have as much house. So even though young people, I think, want to have a place they can call their own, I would not be surprised if those sort of homes look more European, so to speak, a little smaller, a little more densely packed together.
We'll go back to our phone lines now. Erica is joining us next in Madison. Hi, Erica.
Hi.
What do you think?
I think I've actually been in human resources for a number of years now. I graduated from college in 2005. And one of the issues that I see, I guess, I don't know if you want to say with my generation or the generation that we're dealing with sometimes, is their expectations when they come out of school. Sometimes people think just because they have a degree, they should earn $45,000, $50,000 a year. And, you know, with no internships, no work experience, no nothing, and you get people that you're offering them decent entry-level jobs with a salary of, you know, $28,000 to $35,000 a year, and they just think it's beneath them.
Okay, thanks a lot, Erica. And Erica, getting at some intergenerational conflict, we've seen a lot written about millennials. Millennials, I'm sure, contesting some of what's been written about them, some of what Erica is saying there. What do you think about, you know, sort of things like a work ethic?
This is a really interesting question, and I think that she really hit the nail on the head when she talked about expectations. One of the things that I've written about is that I think that there's an enormous expectation gap in the millennial generation, and college plays a huge role in it, and the recession plays a huge role in it. But a part of it, I think, is just cultural, that the culture of college is one of customizability and choice, and you're at the center of this universe of options, and you get to select your major and your dorm and your classes and your thesis and thesis advisor. And then you graduate in the real world, and in the real world, corporations' structure, their organizational structure, doesn't oscillate to improve upon the to basically make 22-year-olds happy. And so I think that you have this expectation gap that exists there, and human resources departments of larger organizations and smaller organizations are going to be exquisitely sensitive to it. The other thing that I think is really important to make clear, possibly at a younger age, even 17, 18, is one thing that's really interesting that Erica said is that internships are an enormous part of the hiring process, that people look for internships to determine what your particular workplace skills are. That is not a message that I got when I was 17 or 18. I'm in my late 20s now. So I did not realize the importance of internships until rather late in the game. And high schools and colleges should probably do a much more explicit job of letting upwardly smart young people know that when they turn 21 and 22 and start looking for work, they're going to be judged by their internships and work experiences as much, if not more, than their college, their major, and their grades.
I think we have time for one more quick call. Samantha is next in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Samantha.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, thanks.
Good. So, yeah, I'm 24, and I graduated in 2013, and I have a retail job that I've had since I've graduated, and they do pay well. I got a raise. I wasn't paying well at first, but I got a raise. However, they don't offer any benefits. And, you know, I've searched around for other jobs, Most of them are farther away than where I live. And typically, they're not in the field that I went to school for. So I think that's another issue we're having in my generation is that...
Okay, I'm going to cut you off there, Samantha, just so we have time for Derek to respond. Derek, just briefly, what would you say to Samantha's concern there about retail jobs?
She mentioned the word compensation. That speaks to a really important point here, which is that healthcare costs have grown tremendously in the last not just few years since Obamacare was passed, but frankly, the last decade, the last two decades. And one of the major reasons, and I'll close with this, one of the major reasons why take-home pay has not increased as much is that overall compensation actually is growing, and more of that compensation is going into paying for things like healthcare.
Derek, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That was Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic, where he writes about economics, labor markets, and the entertainment business.